Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm Nancy Roth. A week of readings from Shorty's Yarns, The Cowboy Tales of Bruce Kiskaden. His cowboy poetry is still wildly popular and performed in the circles of that popular art form. But the stories lay buried until Bill Seams found one of them in a library volume of an old Western livestock journal. Further diligent research resulted in a beautifully produced book, Shorty's Yarns, published by the Utah State University Press. It includes many of the excellent pen and ink drawings by Catherine Field that originally accompanied the poems and stories, as well as a great deal of biographical material on Kiskaden. Let's cheer ourselves up with Shorty's Yarns.
Well, I've got some stories of Bill and Shorty, and mostly having to do with Rildy Briggs, who is a kind of sort of Bill's girlfriend, sort of. They keep having adventures. Bill is a very touchy fellow, actually, and he's full of pride. And also, I should mention that one of the things that goes on between Bill and Shorty is that Shorty is short. And he is not the strapping man that's attractive to the women a lot of the time, like Bill is. So Shorty is always kind of in the background, a little grumbly about the fact that Bill gets all the gals. So that's the point of some of these stories, that Bill's pride and Shorty's pride as well. Well, this one is called Bill Goes to Turkey Creek Dance. One night, little Sammy Jackson rides into camp and gives it out that there's going to be a dance at his dad's ranch over on Turkey Creek, and it's time so that the wagon will be in easy riding distance of there that night. Of course, me and Bill went along with the rest of the boys, and things was a-doing fine till Rildy Briggs comes in with a feller that was a stranger to most of us. Bill, he sure looks at him jealous, for he ain't forgot Rildy. And that feller is a big, good-looking man and all dressed up in store clothes. To make it worse, she don't speak to Bill, but gives him a sort of high-chinned look. I sizes this hombre up and sees that he's plenty tall and wide with it, and has a gun under his glad rags in a shoulder holster. I don't like him, not any. Old Miss Jackson tells me his name is Barnes, that he's working on the ranch for Rildy's dad. The boys was all peaceful and keeping in line, except two or three kids that was a little too young to shave and just old enough to want to show off a heap. Barnes, he goes a lot out of his way to declare himself and allow that he ain't scared of nobody and that there's going to be order there or he'll know why. Nobody liked that, for we all allowed we just about could take care of ourselves, and that passel of kids was plumb harmless. It wasn't very long till little Johnny Curtin comes falling in at the door, drunk, and bumps again a couple that's dancing, and right now this Barnes grabs him by the slack of the pants and slings him out at the door and declares himself again. Bill is going to take it up, but I get him stopped. We goes outside, and I see Bill is talking to the kids, and that Barnes and Rildy is sitting in a window with their backs sticking out in the dark. Sammy comes out and hands Bill his dad's old six-shooter, and I begin to be scared. But Bill, he steps up quiet-like with the gun in his left hand, and what does he do but hit Barnes a terrible punch over the kidney with his right hand, and at the same time he fires the gun into the ground with his left. Rildy gives a scream, and Barnes, he hollers that he's shot and falls into the room and keeps hollering for help and for a doctor. Next, he's giving out dying messages for his folks. And when I asks him if he ain't got no farewell word for Rildy, he says he's married. And right then, the wagon boss was on the job and jerks Barnes's coat and vest off and separates his pants and shirt and starts looking for the bullet hole. Barnes has on a pair of big, broad galluses, which we stripped down, and we also took off his six-gun. We was having a heap of fun till them fool kids ups and tells what Bill done and say that Barnes feller wasn't dying no more. He bellers out a string of cuss words and plows right into Bill like a mad bull, and you bet Bill is right there to tear up sand with him. Barnes's shirt tail is out and his galluses is a flapping wild, and all the folks that don't get out of the way gets knocked over and tromped down till they clinch and go to the floor together, and the house shakes like a wagon box on a rocky road. Rildy rushes up and tries to kick Bill, but she fouls her foot in one of them galluses and falls down, and they both go rolling over till she yells like a mashed cat. Bill's overalls is shrunk and tight, and the seat busts open with the strain, and his red flannel underdrawer shows up mighty plain. And old Miss Jackson yells that he has been knifed, her not having good eyesight and having got her specs knocked off in the fracas. About that time, both men is on their feet again, and it's anybody's fight till Rildy grabs a big specimen rock that is used to prop the door open and slams it at the back of Bill's head. But just then, Bill dodges from a lick, and the stone goes past his head and hits Barnes between the eyes and knocks him stiff as a plank. After that, them two fellers is pulled apart by the crowd, and the wagon boss grabs Rildy around the waist and hollers for the fiddlers to strike up the music, for he says that Rildy is a heap better at dancing than she is at throwing rocks. And he makes so much fun for everybody that the dance goes on peaceable again. But you can see by the looks of that Barnes feller that he figures maybe Rildy busted him with that rock a purpose. And you can see, too, that Rildy has gone plumb foolish over the wagon boss, which makes Bill and Barnes so jealous-minded that they goes outside and makes up and talks about the uncertainness and foolishness of women folks in general. One of the things I notice in these stories is that not like standard notions of Westerns, but being armed is not a standard operating procedure. Firearms are present, but they have certain specific uses. So one of the things that Shorty keeps an eye on and notices is when people are armed, it can lead to trouble, he believes. So, well, I'm going to read another story here called Bill Takes the Mules to Preaching. It carries on with his adventures with Rildy Briggs. One of the things that the story hinges on is the difference between horses, but we don't ever call them horses, we call them hosses, and mules. Hosses are high-strung beasts and liable to get scared at the craziest things. You don't want to wave a rag at them. You don't want to wave a rope around them. If they don't know what it is, they'll go do something because they're afraid of it, whereas mules are more phlegmatic and they're calm beasts despite their other disadvantages. To make sense of this story also, in some part of it, there's a preacher. It was a custom in these days, probably around 1900, that preachers tended to have long hair, whereas the style amongst the common folk was short hair in those days. But preachers sort of stood out by having long hair. That's apparently gone away, but that's what it was back then. So Bill takes the mules to preaching. The wagon boss didn't make such a hit with Rildy Briggs as a feller might think. Because when we gets back from the work, the boss's wife, she tells us that Rildy is took up with a young preacher that comes and preaches in the valley sometimes, and that he's going to have a meeting in the schoolhouse on Sunday night. Bill, he allows we ought to go and see what sort of hombre this preacher is. And I agrees. For from the way Bill acts, I figures there's going to be a little action before it is all over. Sunday night, we saddles up to go, but Bill stalls around until the boss and his wife goes. And then he takes his saddle off the hoss and leads out the old mule team, Jack and Judy. He saddles old Judy and tells me to saddle Jack. I ain't stuck on riding that old work mule, but knowing it's part of Bill's game, I does it. We get to preaching while they're singing, and they're sure going like a revival. And above all the bellerin', you can hear some feller singing bass. We looks in the winder, and boy, howdy. If there ain't that preacher, better than 6 foot tall and 200 pound if he weigh an ounce. All bone and muscle, too. And he's not so young, but middle-aged and right at his best. You could see in a minute the crowd was with him. We light off, and I tie Jack to the hitching rack. And Bill takes Judy around to the other side of the schoolhouse. And we gets in a back seat just as the singing is over and the preacher starts to pray. I gets Bill's idea, and I like to bust out a laughing right now. For if them mules can't see each other, they will keep a braying as long as they can hear each other. The preacher has just started to pray, and an old brother hollers, "Amen! Yeehaw! Yeehaw!" hollers old Judy. One old sister hollers, "Glory!" And old Jack brays out, "Yeehaw! Yeehaw!" "Oh, Lord, we lifts our voices," says the preacher, and right them both mules cut loose with a bray that a deaf and dumb could have heard a mile away. Rildy, she slips back to us and whispers that she is going to tie the mules together so they'll be quiet, and she goes outside. I give Bill a shove and winks for him to foller, for I figure the play is Bill's, for the preacher has the bull by the tail and can't turn loose, seeing he's all fouled up with his praying right about then. Bill, he don't move, so I starts to go, but Bill, he pulls me back onto the seat. Well, we don't hear the mules no more, and pretty soon Rildy comes in and sets down looking very polite and mannerful. But all the same, it looks like Bill has got the preacher down, for everybody is tickled, and some of the young folks has got to where they don't try to keep from laughing. But the preacher, he just laughs too, and then he says he guesses he better preach about a mule, and he sure does. He preaches about a feller named Absalom that lived back in Bible times, and he went and made a war and tried to steal the country away from his dad. Seems like this Absalom was a brat that had been spoilt in the raisin. He was a good-looking cuss and wore long hair and rode a mule, and once when there was a big fight on this here mule, he cold jaws on this Absalom feller and stampedes into the brush, and Absalom got drug off, and while he was fouled up by the hair, the other outfit comes up and speared him to death. That preacher makes it pretty strong that Absalom wasn't much of a hand, or he wouldn't be riding a mule. And the laugh was sure on me and Bill, but we had to take it. After meeting, Rildy comes up and talks to us till the folks has all said good night and gone, and the preacher fetches his team and buggy to take her home. And she even lets Bill help her climb in. And we says good night and goes to get our mules. The mules is gone, and we are loose on foot 6 miles from the ranch. That walk wasn't nothing cheerful, and I tells Bill he's a fool for letting that gal get loose alone like that, and he ought to listen to me. "All right," says Bill, "I didn't listen to you at the meeting, but I expect to listen to you all the way home." But the boss met us with the spring wagon before we got halfway, because he'd found the mules waiting at the pasture gate. He said Rildy had tied them together all right, but she hadn't tied them up to nothing, so they just naturally went home. The next night after supper, they sure hurrahed us a heap, and for once the boss's wife takes up for Rildy and says she's a plumb smart gal, and she reckons that their Absalom sermon was a good one, and the preacher come out of that tangle about right. "Wait till he preaches the one about Samson," says Bill. "What do you mean?" asks the boss. "Well," says Bill, "he was a feller that got mixed up with a woman instead of a mule, and he wore long hair, too. 'Pears like them long-haired fellers didn't have much luck back in Bible times." One thing that a person needs to know about this next story is that the difference in range cowboy craft is the difference between hard and fast roping and dally roping. When you're a dally roper, what you do is you use the rope around the saddle horn, but you don't tie it to the saddle horn. You just make a couple of turns around the saddle horn. It makes there be a lot of friction, and you can hold an animal, but if things start to go bad, you can turn it loose. In fact, there was a poem by a guy named S. Omar Barker. He had one called Rule of the Range. It said, "For all you tie-fast ropers, here's a rule that fits. Whatever you get your rope on, it's yours, or else you're its." So, this is a story called Preacher Loses His Team. It was a give-out that there would be a preaching at the schoolhouse a Sunday, and Bill didn't aim to be bluffed out, so he says to me that he's going over if I'll go along. And he aims to go in and sit right there, even if the preacher is there, with his gal. Now this gal, Rildy Briggs, couldn't mind her own affairs no more than a pet hen, for she had done just as she darn pleased ever since she was a long yearling. And we heard that she had done and took the preacher's buggy team and gone a-visiting for a couple of days at a time and left him sitting at her dad's ranch till she got back. I knowed that meant trouble, for the preacher had the prettiest and spryest little roan team that was ever in them parts, and say how he took care of them. Well, when we got to the schoolhouse, the folks was pretty well gathered for meeting, and the preacher wasn't there yet. But we soon see him coming, and Rildy was in the buggy with him, and she was driving. Her kid brother and sister was riding along behind on a pair of old willer-tailed ponies. When they gets close, Rildy starts showing off and whips up the team and holds them in to make them step high. Just then, her kid brother jumps an old mare that's running loose around there and throws a loop around her rump to spook her. The loop snaps off her rump all right, but her tail is full of burrs, and the rope catches and holds. Boy, howdy, that button has tied his rope fast, and the way the old mare jerks his dinky mateship saddle off ain't no way slow. The kid lets out a yell, and the old mare cuts past the preacher's team with that saddle a-flying around on the end of the rope, and the team leaves from there right now. Before the preacher can grab the lines, they've left the road and jumped a little arroyo. That is, the team jumped it. And the buggy stayed right there, and Rildy and the preacher dove right over the dashboard, head first, and lands out on the other side. The team takes the buggy tongue and tails in behind the kid's pony, but right then the old mare cuts in front of them, and that saddle and rope tangles all in amongst them, and down they goes in a pile. And the old mare can't pull loose, but she sure ain't throwing off a bit, and the way she pulls is terrible. By that time, me and Bill has forked our hosses and got to the wreck, and I cuts the rope and stops the worst of the damage. But when we untangled that team, they was a sight. They was fresh shod, and the way they had tore each other up, you couldn't believe, and the rope had got around the nigh hoss's hind foot, and he was lamed up till he couldn't put that foot to the ground. The preacher lands on the scene, and Bill says, "Now, if they'd have been mules, they'd never have done it." I stops Bill short and tells him it ain't no time to joke, and by so doing stops trouble, for that parson man is on the peck and no fooling. The boss tells me and Bill to take the team over to the ranch and take our time about it and doctor them up. The preacher comes home with the boss and his wife, and the next morning they send me down to Briggs's for the preacher's valise. Rildy and the kid is all full of talk, and she says to tell the preacher to come right down there and explain his conduct by not ever speaking to her and letting old man Johnson and his wife fetch her and the kid home. When I gets to the ranch, the preacher and one of the hands has got his buggy there with a pair of shafts in it, and he has traded his little team to the boss for a big old workhorse, and is ready to leak out from there as soon as I get there with the valise. I starts to talk to him about his team, but I sees I'm all wrong. "Don't mention 'em," he says. "They're plumb spoiled now. I broke 'em and I drove 'em for 3 years. They was high-strung, but it's the first trouble I ever had with 'em. I don't never want to see 'em again. Tell your friend Bill goodbye for me. I've already said goodbye to the folks. I watched him drive the old hoss out the gate and sure felt sorry for him. That night at supper, the boss's wife was doing a heap of talking about Rildy and her doings, and she wasn't fur her no more, but she was sure pitying the preacher to death. When the boss, he grins and says, "Well, if he ever comes back to these parts, I reckon either me or Bill will have to ask him if he won't preach that sermon about Samson, like Bill said, in place of that mule sermon about Absalom." The boss's wife was about to get mad, and then she busts out laughing and says, "Maybe Bill is right about women folks being a heap dangerouser to men than mules ever dare be." Bill leaves for the high country. This is Bill's resolving issues with his pride. He goes to the high country. This is probably back in Colorado, and there's the low country, the hot lower country, and then there's the high country, the mountain pastures, which you can only get to in the summertime. So there's activities in the high country and in the low country, and sometimes you take cattle up there and bring them back down and whatnot. Bill leaves for the high country. When we get settled down from laughing about Rildy and the kid brother and the preacher, things sort of slid along for a few days. And then one evening about dark, in rides Rildy and has supper. And when the folks ask her to stay all night, she allows she might. The boss's wife looks at Bill right pleasant-like and asks Bill if maybe he can't put up the dishes. And Rildy grins at him. But Bill, he ain't having none. And he says right point blank that he's going to visit some folks down on the crick. And he goes down to the bunkhouse and pulls off his shirt and begins to shave. I don't say nothing, but I figure Bill has just three shirts. And so I takes all three of them and dips the tails in the water bucket. And a flannel shirt don't dry so quick that a feller would want to ride 4 miles and back in a wet shirt tail when it's freezing weather. I don't do no dressing up myself, but I just hightails it over to where them two gals lived on the crick and leaves Bill to figure it out best he can. And I reckon he can't get into none of my clothes, and so he's got to set by the bunkhouse stove and wait for his'n to dry. It was doing him right, for he ain't no call to get so sassy with a pretty gal like Rildy when she come all that way up to the ranch to sort of make up with him. When I gets to where I'm going, them two gals was pleasant enough, but they started to do a heap of asking why Bill never came along, and I see that he had my time beat there. So I had to tell them the whole affair, and they sure laughed fit to kill. When I got back to the bunkhouse, it was late, and the place smelled like somebody had beat a skunk to death in there. I knowed the boss had trapped and shot a skunk the day before over by the hoss corral, but I reckoned there wasn't no more skunks about. I lit the lamp to see how Bill had took my joke, and Bill wasn't there. Bill's bed was gone, and when I went out to the corral, his saddle was gone. I crawled into my bed, and I like to strangled, and I felt a funny lump of something. I lit the lamp again, and if that derned Bill hadn't took and put that dead skunk plumb in the middle of my bed. I had to hang my bed outside for overnight, and I built up a fire and set by the stove till morning. The only thing that comforted me was a pair of old overalls that was still warped to the shape of Bill's legs and a pair of wore-out old boots that he'd throwed on top of them. It wasn't really airy in one of these, but on top of the heap was a wet shirt tail that had been cut off rough and sudden with a sharp pocket knife. That sort of made me feel even, for I knowed I was settin' warm and comfortable by a warm stove while Bill was riding out for the high country on a freezing cold night without no tail in his shirt.
So, Bill, I was wondering, what sort of folks ended up being cowboys?
It's surprising what a wide range of people ended up doing that. I think it pulled in a lot of adventurous people from all over the place, more than you might expect. And surprising also how high a level of education there was amongst these people that ended up doing it. I don't I don't know why, but you come across so many literary references and historic references that it's clear that they were pulling from an educated bunch of people. Mm. And well, they were all over the map, really, but you couldn't discount the attainments of the cowboys as a group. It would go wrong if you underestimated their level of culture or their level of intelligence.
We've been hearing a reading from Shorty's Yarns, the Western stories and poems of Bruce Kiskaden, with illustrations by Catherine Field, published by the Utah State University Press. They were read by the book's editor, Bill Seams. The music you're hearing is by that same Bill Seams with Ted Hensold from their album, The Educated Fellers. The Bookshelf is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Series producer and editor is Vern Windham. I'm occasional producer Nancy Roth.